This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The Rio Grande defines the border between the United States and Mexico, but there are some parts of the Texas side of the border that are kind of indistinguishable from some of the most poverty-stricken areas on the Mexican side. These Texas colonias and municipalities have no running water, or sometimes water that is unreliable or undrinkable. This creates health issues that are chronic and dangerous. Are you familiar with these conditions on the border? Call in, tell us your story. Do you think the state or the nation has an obligation to make sure that these areas do have quality water? And why do you think this problem persists? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and shoot us a tweet at @tprsource. The TexasTribune.org, the journalism website, has been investigating the water issue on the border, and we're joined by their reporting team that has been doing the hard work, Nina Satija and Alexa Ura. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So, Nina, let me ask you, what is the scope of this problem?
Boy, that's actually a tough question to answer. The numbers that we were able to identify is about 90,000 people, the latest estimate, most recent estimate. That's the number of people living in Texas on the Texas-Mexico border who don't have access to probably any running water. So pretty big number there. But actually, most of the communities we visited did have running water, but the water that came out of their taps was not reliably clean and safe to drink. So that was tens of thousands more. So, you know, the scope of this problem is certainly more than 100,000 people, and it does run the entire length of the border for sure.
Alexa, what communities did y'all look at?
We focused on four communities along the length of the Rio Grande, and we started up in Vinton by El Paso, which is a small village that depends on groundwater wells for their water, and those water wells were recently found to be contaminated with arsenic and bacteria like E. coli. We visited Las Pampas, which is a remote colonia outside of Presidio with no running water, where folks have no alternative to hauling water from miles away. We also traveled down to Rio Bravo and El Ceniso by Laredo, where folks should have had clean water from a new water treatment plant, but it's been unable to operate that plant properly. And lastly, we were down in Rio Grande City, where sort of a patchwork of water suppliers divides the town into areas that can trust their water and areas that can't be so sure.
So that's a wide area that you traveled, 1,000 miles, I would imagine, between one and the other. But they're linked by this similar problem, Alexa?
Right, yes. We went to these different communities and the roots of their problems and their inability to access reliably clean water were different. But, you know, they were sort of emblematic of a larger widespread problem that you see along the border of families struggling to hold on to sort of one of the basic necessities.
Okay, so I'm going to get a call on the air right away. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join the conversation. Mooney has called in. Hi, Mooney. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I'd just like to point out that it's rather hypocritical in the state of Texas that the state of Texas would be pointing out that it does want to be supportive or to assist communities that do not have access to clean water, when they have water right laws that are in place that permit a property owner from selling water and converting that water to their own income, irregardless of the effect to their neighbor. These are on the books. These are all of the water wars that are starting to be created in little communities such as Kinney County, in which the property owner on the right doesn't have anything to say if the property owner over on the left chooses to sell that water. Secondly, with that, is the state of Texas has absolutely no support for organic gardening. And as your previous speaker just discussed, there on the border town were records of arsenic in water and other pesticides that are being done by commercial growers.
All right, Mooney, thank you for your call. I appreciate your input on that. So she's talking about there's a variety of water issues all across the state. We've got reservoirs that are going dry. We do have some communities that have to have their water trucked in when their wells go dry. So why focus on the border, Nina?
Well, I think that it's important to make the distinction here between, you know, issues of drought which is some of what you're talking about, and then some of the issues that these folks are facing on the border. Now, drought is certainly an issue on the border. In places like Rio Grande City, they've had to deal with a lack of water from the Rio Grande because of such extreme drought conditions. But really, this is about access to clean water. And, you know, you can take the dirtiest water you can possibly imagine and turn it into pretty clean water. They're doing that in Wichita Falls right now. But what we have on the border is a situation of communities that often don't have the know-how, they don't have the talent and the expertise to run water treatment plants correctly. They don't have the wherewithal to pay back multi-million dollar loans that they, you know, that are offered by the Texas Water Development Board. And so, you know, we wanted to go beyond this question of Texas drought and lack of water and talk about lack of clean drinking water. You know, most of the communities we visited, as we said before, do have running water, and it's not really a quantity issue, it's a quality issue.
So, Nina, what are the health outcomes? What are the problems that could happen to people because they live in these conditions?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a difficult one to answer because there's so little data. But what I'll tell you is that in Vinton, there is some pretty good data on this. Researchers at the University of Texas at El Paso went to Vinton. They did a study, and they talked to a pretty large proportion of that of the population of that village of Vinton. There, it's about 2,000 people, and they found a significant percentage of the population reported gastrointestinal issues, reported skin rashes, reported things that could certainly be linked to issues in their drinking water, although there's no way to know for sure. In Rio Bravo and El Ceniso, that community, their water actually tested positive for the bacteria E. coli back in 2013, and they were told to boil their water for more than 3 weeks. E. coli has pretty immediate health effects. If you drink water with E. coli or you eat food contaminated with E. coli, you'll probably experience nausea, vomiting, and then it could be a more serious, even life-threatening, depending on your state of health already.
All right, and so this causes kids to miss school or people who can't work, or do we know about any sort of shortened lifespans? I mean, what are the health outcomes, Nina?
Well, certainly in Vinton, you know, the contamination of the water with arsenic could be linked to cancer. Arsenic can cause a variety of different types of cancer. And that's something that if you're drinking this water over the span of your lifetime, if you're drinking it for decades, as many of these people have, that could be a serious problem. But in terms of real outcomes, you know, we really just don't have the data. The Secretary of State's office, which tracks some Colonia's data in Texas, does say that the level of waterborne diseases like hepatitis and things like that are higher in Colonias than in other parts of the state, but we don't have great data.
Okay, we're going to take a break, a one-minute break. We are talking about the water issue along the Texas-Mexico border. On the Texas side, people say there are conditions that are similar to the third world. Why does this happen? What can be done? Why have past efforts failed? Call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. A new series of reports on the Texas Tribune shows that some water along the Rio Grande is undrinkable. It's being called the Texas border's third world problem. The Texas Tribune released this report highlighting four areas along the border where it says that clean water is not always available in these towns. It's impacting people's health. Thousands, tens of thousands of people are being impacted by that. And with me to talk about that, we've got two reporters on this team. Alexa Ura and Nina Satija. And so let me ask you, Nina, why are these areas still growing? We're still seeing population growth in these areas, even though they have these terrible conditions.
Well, that's a good question, David. I wouldn't say that it's happening in every of the communities that we visited. The population growth, when you look at state trends, is happening certainly in the Rio Grande Valley, a huge population growth expected and happening right now, and then in El Paso as well. And, you know, I think people are moving to those areas for the economic opportunity. They're moving there for jobs. There's migration from other countries, of course. That population is growing, but it can in some cases make this problem of access to clean drinking water, it can make that problem worse when you have a higher population.
So, Alexa, how would you describe the the demographic of individuals who are living in these areas?
Well, like most of the border, the folks in these communities are going to be largely low-income Hispanics. Some of them are going to be migrants, mixed immigration status there. But there's also sort of a cultural barrier, and Nina sort of talked about this, about not knowing who to ask for help or how to do that. And there are language barriers. You know, only, I think it's only about a third of people here speak English well. And so you're also running into those sort of issues in these communities. And oftentimes it's folks who move to these areas in search of low-income housing along the border, and that seems to be harder and harder to find. And so that's how some of these communities have been established.
I remember when El Ceniso and Rio Bravo, when that was being illegally developed as a colonia, illegally subdivided down in Webb County right next to Laredo. And these problems, they have been tackled before. And we see Congress people and senators make these announcements, and all this money is going to go down there to fix these issues. And why did not that not happen, Nina?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, especially about Rio Bravo and El Ceniso. Yes, as you mentioned, former colonias, which were developed back in the 80s by a notorious developer named Cecil McDonald.
I remember him well.
yes, he was a big story in the state in the 90s. And, you know, those two communities were supposed to be a success story. They have everything that colonias, you know, by definition do not have. They have paved roads, they have electricity, they have a water and sewer system. But that water system just really never worked properly. You know, state money was pitched in to build a brand new water treatment plant for this community in 2006, and there are aspects of that water plant that have never been worked properly. Water rates were never raised in order to pay back some of the loans, so that's an issue as well. And in fact, in that community, you know, 8 former and current workers at the water treatment plant have been indicted for allegedly falsifying water quality reports. So lots of issues in the local community, and it kind of gives you the sense that Congress and the state can do a lot of things with money, at least they used to, but even that may not always go far enough.
But in the Valley, we've seen political infighting, these battling water districts and taxing bodies that not wanting to get along, water being cut off at school districts because they haven't paid their water bill in so long. I mean, isn't there some sort of water master who should be able to step in and make sure the individuals are not hurt when political issues get in the way, Nina?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we found time and time again in asking state agencies and elected officials and local politicians and officials, who is in charge here, who is accountable for this problem, and we just never got a clear answer. I can't tell you how many different agencies we talked to who said, really, you should talk to that agency, or, you know, they would say, we don't give out any money. We're not a funding agency, or we're not a regulatory agency. There's really no one person or agency or entity in charge of this problem, and that's kind of where we are today.
So, Alexa, as you went up and down the border doing the story, did you see things that you didn't plan on seeing in the United States?
I mean, I think one of the couples that we talked to in Las Bambas sort of put it best. They moved to the U.S. from Mexico, from the border town of Ojinaga, and, you know, she said they never thought they would live in this country and not have running water in their homes. And, you know, we researched these communities before going out there, but I think it's, you know, you can imagine what it's like to not have running water in your home, but it's not until you see, you know, a 70-year-old man walking you through the hours-long process that it is to drive into town, fill up a water tank from a spigot coming out of the ground, and wait until that water tank is filled up with just enough water for a few days. And it's not until you really see that you understand sort of the dire situations that people are in over a natural resource that we often take for granted.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the reporting that the TexasTribune.org is doing called Undrinkable, looking at conditions along the border. Many areas have water quality issues. Some pockets have no running water at all. And let's get a caller on the air, Ralph. Hey, Ralph, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I was just curious. Back in the 60s and 70s, that was the grapefruit and orange heaven for the United States. But when we started developing the Superfund site, it seems like we have a whole bunch of them down in those locations. So I think that is added to the rise of spina bifida, anencephaly, and spontaneous abortions. What do your folks have to say on that?
Okay, Ralph, thanks for that. You bring up a variety of issues. And Nina, can you help us?
Well, I'm not sure I heard that entire question, but I know there was some talk about agriculture down in the valley and other industry and the creation of Superfund sites. So I would say that all of this activity along the border, which of course is happening on the other side as well as on the Texas side, does contribute to this problem. It contributes to severe pollution in the Rio Grande, and that is certainly a huge problem for a lot of these communities. Rio Grande City, which we visited and is featured in our series, they are actually one of the few cities that pulls directly from the Rio Grande. They actually have an intake pipe that goes into the river itself. It doesn't go into one of the agricultural canals like many other cities where they get their water. And so, it's directly pulling from a river that deals with this kind of pollution, industrial pollution, agricultural pollution, some of it which has been built up over decades. And it's hard to address because you've got to address it on the Mexican side as well. And just kind of logistically, that's hard. You're dealing with two different governments. It's a tough problem to deal with.
Laredo draws its water directly from the Rio Grande. But when these communities, what do they do for treated sewage? Do they just dump it raw into the Rio Grande, Alexa?
Oftentimes, the communities on the U.S. side are going to rely on septic tanks, especially in some of these colonias and some of these in unincorporated areas. But those themselves present a series of problems. They're very expensive to get cleaned out. And so sometimes they overfill and often seep into sort of folks' backyard if that's where the septic tank is. What we saw in Vinton was that there was a lack of funds to be able to clean out septic tanks. And so the overflowing materials were flowing into some of these shallow wells that people actually rely on. And so that's where some of the contamination can come from as well.
Back to the phone lines with David. Hi, David. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. This topic makes my blood boil, and I'll tell you why. I've developed real estate on the border, specifically around Laredo, and colonias were developed by developers who sold lots to people without water and without electricity. My question is, why haven't we gone after those developers for the money instead of the taxpayers?
Okay, David, thanks for that great call. And Nina, can you help us?
Yes, good question. The answer is the state has gone after many of those developers. Cecil McDonald, who I mentioned previously, is probably the best example. The state sued him, I think, more than once back in the 1990s. He was very aggressively pursued by the state. And some of the money that they got out of his various bankruptcy settlements and others, they actually used to build water service, water pipes and things like that, and infrastructure for Rio Bravo and El Ceniso. So that was certainly something that happened a lot in the 1990s. Not sure I hear a lot about prosecution of colonias developers today, and that may be in part because it doesn't happen as much. But it's certainly a tool in the state attorney general's toolbox. It is certainly something that he or she is legally able to do. And that's been the case since 1989 when there was legislation passed since the early 90s, when there was legislation passed giving the state permission to prosecute these types of developers.
Yeah, the laws have been tightened considerably, but we're dealing with the legacy of when things were a lot looser. Let's get Roberto on the line. He's called in. Roberto, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I'm just curious as to why the TCEQ isn't more in control of the water supplies, especially considering it's the most necessary part of the environment.
Okay, good question, Robert. Roberto, so Alexa, why isn't the TCEQ involved here?
Yes, so the TCEQ is actually very regularly involved whenever there are reports or, they investigate some of these water suppliers. But in discussing this issue with them, we heard about them only being able, there's only a certain amount of things they can do. They often cite some of these most frequent violators. They issue financial penalties for them, but that's almost about all they can do. And so oftentimes they're limited to doing that. And we've seen in cases like Rio Bravo and El Ceniso where fines have been issued, but they've sort of stopped as working as a deterrent against some of these violations.
Okay, let's get Fiona. Fiona has called in. Hi, Fiona, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm from another country. I've lived in this country since 1978, and I'm absolutely appalled that this is actually going on and lots of finger-pointing. And I'm thinking my country and this country sends huge amounts of money out to other countries to get water systems in place, like Africa. Really? Why are we not doing it for these people, regardless of whether they speak English or understand English? It's a basic, fundamental need for every human being.
Okay, Fiona, thank you for the call. And Nina, can I get your reaction?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that there's obviously a need for more funding to address this problem. And there was a lot of political will to provide dollars for projects like this in poor communities around the border and outside of Texas, too, not just in Texas, but in California and all of the other border states in the U.S. But the political will is just not really there anymore. Back in the 1990s, Congress used to approve, you know, at least $100 million a year for this effort, and that was grant money. So that wasn't even there was more money, and there's still money available for loans for these communities. But you got to imagine some of these poor communities can't afford to pay back a $10 million loan to build a treatment plant. So there used to be a lot of grant money available. Communities would take that money, and they wouldn't have to pay it back, and they could use it. Today, there's almost nothing left. It's a question for Congress, I guess, whether they want to put any kind of renewal into this effort.
All right, Nina Satija, thank you so much. Alexa Urwa, they are the team from the Texas Tribune.org. They are going and doing an investigation of water issues along the border. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And the source continues after this NPR and local news break. Stay tuned.